The Tom Woods Show, episode 2119.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody. I'm giving away three free courses from my Liberty Classroom. One of them is ex-Marxist Michael Rechtenwald teaching you about critical theory so you can understand leftism and fight it better, as well as our course on how Alexander Hamilton screwed up America and the history of the conservative and libertarian movements. Check it out at 3freecourses.com. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. Michael Malice is with us today. You know all about the notorious Michael Malice. His most recent book is The Anarchist Handbook. He is the host of You're Welcome, and that is spelled Y-O-U-R. And if you don't understand that, you're driving me crazy. Michael Malice, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Tom.
All right. I want to just talk about current events. I do a lot of evergreen episodes, you know, that are divorced from current events. But now I just got to... How can you not talk about this thing? I wrote an issue in my newsletter the other day about this whole Roe versus Wade being overturned leak that came out. First of all, do you have any thoughts about the reason behind the leak? Because I've heard, you know, the most common theory seems to be that you leak something like this, it puts tremendous pressure on justices to maybe rethink it because our justices turn out not to be sitting on platonic mountaintops divorced from politics, entertaining abstract ideas. You know, they are actually able to be influenced in that way. But on the other hand, I've heard a very cynical theory that John Roberts may have leaked it, not all that happy with where it's going, and that maybe this will prepare the ground for a more moderate final result. Do you have any thought on that?
I would be extremely skeptical if Roberts leaked it. The associated information with the opinion being leaked was that Roberts was on the fence. And if that were the case, I think the information would say that Roberts would have been a no vote with the three leftist Supreme Court justices. Roberts, to me, I think this is pretty much universally agreed on, is really this kind of establishment by the book. I love what the law is and represents, like, goody two-shoes in some ways.
Yeah.
So this really seems out of character for him. And the reason I would guess, we're just reading tea leaves here. I would guess that some clerk saw this and was like, oh crap, I can't do anything about this. I'm a clerk, but someone's got to put a stop to this. And they're like, all right, let me send out the bat signal, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, now that it's out there and Roberts has authenticated it, although he said something like that it's not necessarily the court's final statement.
Which is true.
Statement.
Which is absolutely true. They haven't voted.
But I mean, the thing is, if you look at it and the footnotes and everything, if this thing's a forgery, then that guy sure did his homework, right?
Sure.
So you kind of knew it had to be for real. But this just has, first of all, I have to say, number one, this surprises me. And I say that as somebody who am sympathetic to overturning Roe, but it surprises me. I figured that both sides have kind of benefited in a cynical political way from the existence of Roe, in terms of fundraising and keeping people constantly on edge, but then never actually doing anything. It's just kind of perfect. And then secondly, even among maybe not all of the right of center justices, but there is still this idea that after a certain amount of time passes, there's settled law and you can trim it around the edges maybe, but you can't take it head on. So I have to say this kind of surprised me. Did it surprise you?
Oh, so I think I can make a joke about you being older than me, but that'll stand for the joke. I think this is easily, not easily, this is almost certainly the biggest Supreme Court decision of our lifetimes. The other ones I would put up there would be Citizens United and the defense of Obamacare, maybe the gay marriage one, but I think that was kind of going to happen legislatively anyway.
Yeah, right.
And how
right.
are you going to be married in Massachusetts, but then you go to Utah, you're not married? That does not make sense. That same reason people go to Vegas. I get a quickie marriage in Nevada, then I'm married back home in Oklahoma or Mississippi or whatever it is. So you kind of have to have that same thing throughout the whole country where each state recognizes other states' wedding laws. I am absolutely very, very surprised. To your point about how justices tend to drift toward the left and also try to like establish law. Roberts specifically brought this up during his confirmation hearings. The term they use, I'm sure you realize, you know this as a scholar, is stare decisis, yep. which is the idea that, you know, all things being equal, the judiciary should kind of defer to what is the established law and tradition as opposed to, you know, overturning things. Because if that's the case, you don't have stability, which is supposedly the basis of Anglo-Saxon law, where things are consistent and you kind of know where things stand before you go into a trial or when you form a contract. On the other hand, this isn't something like, you know, flag burning or, you know, like, you know, some kind of marginal case. This is, you know, if someone is pro-life, as these justices are personally, this is one where you don't really kind of change. You know, if you regard abortion as, you know, killing a child and stopping a human heart, it's going to be really hard for me to see how, you know, just because you're hanging out with Sotomayor and Elena Kagan, who by all accounts are wonderful, fun people, I'm not being sarcastic, it really is hard that's going to be like, well, I'm fine with it now. So I am very, very surprised. And the other thing I think the Democrats or the feminists or, you know, the pro-abortion movement, however you want to call it, really did a disservice to their base because they did not prepare them for that this was coming. Now, we always hear these kind of clarion calls that, oh, if President Trump's elected, if Ron DeSantis, if you elect this particular Republican senator, Roe v. Wade's in danger, send me money. That's a constant drumbeat. But this was not really on the radar screen, I think, for most people in the pro-choice movement. And as a result of this, I think this is a real gut punch. I think because this was not on the radar screen also, in terms of this is about to happen one way or another, it's a bigger shock for many people than the Trump election. Because you knew there was election day, you know, even though it was a given that Hillary was going to win, you know, you had a year preparing for the idea that Trump's going to get elected. They did not have a year preparing for Roe to get overturned.
Right, right, right. There's a lot to talk about here. In my newsletter the other day, I went back and looked at what a lot of supporters of Roe had said over the years, legal scholars. And it's surprising how many of them would say, Harry Blackmun was a great man, but the reasoning in this case is weak to non-existent, that you could make a constitutional case for a right to abortion, but this ain't it. And so when Alito in this leaked document says that the reasoning in Roe is extremely weak, he's actually on pretty strong ground there because you can find a lot of legal scholars on the left who said, yeah, this was argued badly, even though I happen to like the outcome. And that kind of puts me in mind of that whole John Hasnas myth of the rule of law thing.
Yeah.
Because I just had Robert Barnes on the show.
Which is available in the Anarchist Handbook, by the way.
The Anarchist Handbook, which, I mean, I only reason I didn't mention that is that, of course, every listener of the Tom Woods Show already owns the Anarchist Handbook. So, right? If they're in good standing here, the Tom Woods Show. But I had Robert Barnes on, and he had not read the John Hasnas article, but he knows it in his gut. You know, I said, we were talking about Kyle Rittenhouse. And I said he had a judge that at least was willing to, even though this judge, according to Barnes, is actually typically a very pro-prosecutor judge, he was willing to listen and be fair-minded. And that was enough to make people go berserk. And I said, what does it say, though, about the law that somebody like Rittenhouse, it's just a matter of luck. He happened to get a judge that
right.
would listen sympathetically to him. And if he didn't, then there was no chance he would win. And it wouldn't be a matter of, well, he happened to have the facts on his side and he had the law on his side. None of that would matter. If he's politically toxic, he can't win. And he said, yeah, that's basically how it works. That the courts are like a super legislature and they've been trained, the justices have been trained to make the law say what it needs to say for them to get what they want. So now looking at this Roe versus Wade thing, I do think that the anti-Roe case is stronger from a legal perspective. But it, as it turns out, justices who favor so-called abortion rights are against overturning it. And ones who are against that, those against abortion, are the ones who want to overturn. I mean, it just seems a little bit too convenient. So it doesn't really look like it's just a matter of looking at the law. It's this is what I want the outcome to be.
Yeah, Jonathan Haidt has an entire book about this called The Righteous Mind. And he points out, and this doesn't just apply to law, that all of us, our moral sensibilities, we have a visceral moral response, and then our brain fills in the reasoning after the fact. So, and that also means that we tend to find factual or correct data or arguments that result in the conclusion we like, and we tend to be skeptical of or dismiss data or arguments that does not get us to the conclusion that we like. So that, of course, would apply in a legal sense as well. Because the other thing is, it's kind of like if I were someone who's advocating for abortion rights at a very, very basic level, it's Constitution good, right? Abortion rights good. Therefore, the Constitution must be for abortion rights. That's really how the brain works. And you see this all the time with religion too. When you have, you know, how many lefties will sit down and tell you with a straight face, if Jesus were alive, he'd be a socialist. Or the founding fathers, you know, if you like the founding fathers, they'd be agreeing with you today. And if you don't like the founding fathers, they were bad and would be disagreeing with you. So it just, once you see how this is how the brain works, and this book, The Righteous Mind, has my highest possible recommendation, everything else becomes quite clear.
Here's the conventional wisdom that's coming out of this politically. Going into the midterms, there was the prospect of a big red wave. But now this puts Republicans in an awkward position. And I have seen a few people on Twitter I've gotten to know who are kind of like moderate Democrats, but who were totally against the COVID regime, saying, look, I was prepared to be part of that red wave, but now I'm not so sure. How true do you think that is, that analysis?
I don't think that's true at all. I think there is a big lie in, and I saw this as a New Yorker, in the corporate press. They will tell you that pretty much anyone with two brain cells to rub together is pro-choice. Like, there is no pro-life representation in corporate media. It's not a thing. Like, you're told these people exist, you're not told their arguments. I remember there was a law, I was covering this for my old show, Nightshade. There was a law that was passed, either one of the Carolinas or Louisiana, I don't remember where it was. It was some pro-life law. And they were putting forth the position, so they explained the law, and then they had like someone from Planned Parenthood or something, or one of those organizations, explain why this law is wrong and why it violates Roe and so on and so forth. They didn't even have a pretense of having a defender of the law explain why this law is correct or constitutional, anything like that. There wasn't even an attempt. So you would get the impression that there's this overwhelmingly huge, not only pro-choice majority, but also people who are heavily motivated by being pro-choice as their primary issue. In fact, all the data I've seen shows me, I mean, I could be mistaken on this one, that the people who are single issue voters, those who are primarily motivated by abortion being an important issue to them, somewhat more of those people will tend to be pro-life than pro-choice.
I've seen that too.
Yeah. Pro-life people care more about abortion than pro-choice people care about abortion rights, despite what Stephen Colbert might give you the impression to the contrary.
Okay, so then does this have no...
You know why? You know why we know that that's true? Because I think pro-life men and pro-life women have intense feelings about abortion, but pro-choice men do not have as intense feelings about abortion as pro-choice women do. So you're going to have an asymmetry right there.
Oh, that's a very interesting point. It's a very interesting point. So do you think that politically, does this have no effect or does it have a different effect from what they're saying?
It might have an effect in terms of blue states. And also, I got to tell you, it's this is going to be a little cynical, but it's true. It's 6 months away. I don't think they're going to be, because what can a senator do? This might have an issue in the gubernatorial races. That's a big deal. The thing why I think this is also going to be in some ways a win for the pro-life movement is you never, ever hear pro-choice politicians, which overwhelmingly tend to be Democrats, or I think you, at this point, you're not going to have a pro-life Democrat running against a pro-choice Republican. I don't think that happens anymore. They're never called upon to say, okay, you're pro-choice, where's your line? Are you saying 9 months? Are you saying 6 months? And how are you determining that line? All they've had to say for decades is Roe v. Wade said the law, you don't come between a woman and her doctor, the end, fine. That's no longer your position. And now they're really going to have to tap dance because it's really hard to say 9 months. But if you're not saying 9 months and you're pro-choice, you got to figure out somewhere.
True. But when you say they had to say or they have to say, well, they don't have to if the question isn't raised. And if they have a sympathetic press corps, then the question doesn't get raised.
Yeah, but all it's going to take is one. And the press corps, maybe it's like 90%, you know, one way or another. But there are, you look at Steve Ducey, you know, in the White House correspondence. The thing is, a lot of, when a candidate is on the campaign trail, other than Hillary when she was running for Senate, they're not isolated from the press corps. You're going to have some reporters from right of center publications who would look at Breitbart, look at James O'Keefe. All it's going to take is some college kid to just, you know, when they have these town halls or meetings, you can't avoid, doesn't have to be a reporter even. Just get up and say, okay, in your opinion, how should the law decide when human life begins? It's a very fair, it's not a gotcha question at all.
Yeah, that's about as legitimate a question as you could ask for. Do you think court packing is going to come up again as a remedy for this kind of thing?
Yes. Yeah, it's 100% going to come up. And I made the point, and hopefully this will happen, and I feel bad because I'm kind of saving the Supreme Court if people adopt this. The Republicans, when they take over the Senate, if they do, should say, okay, we're putting forth a constitutional amendment setting the Supreme Court at 9 members. And if they don't vote for it, then we're going to pack the court ourselves. So that's really going to put them in a catch-22.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's smart.
And they'll say, we don't have any choice but to pack the court because you just had the opportunity to set it at 9 members. You said no. You're showing your hand. Okay.
Well, when FDR tried to pack the court,
right,
what was interesting was that there were plenty of Democrats, even on the Judiciary Committee.
Including his vice president.
And his vice president, who said that, I mean, even though they know, technically there's no reason you have to have 9, there's nothing in the Constitution that requires that, but it had been a tradition of such long standing, and the motivation behind it was so transparently political that even people in his own party, some of them, said, we can't go along with this. I think there's, where do you think the Democrats would be? Would they be as divided, or would they be more in unison on this now?
I think they'd be more in unison on this.
Yeah.
But, you know, so that's why the Republicans are going to have to take offense, which I would have thought would never happen. But I think some of them are wising up. I'm shocked to see this, to see it happen.
Now, I'm somebody who favors, I don't know what it would look like. I'm not entirely sure the form it would take, but I like conversations revolving around so-called national divorce. And you have to figure this advances that at some level.
Oh, of course. I mean, I tweeted that out, that this is the biggest, if not biggest possible step toward national divorce I could think of for 2 reasons. One is if you have 2 cultures in terms of abortion, whereas we've been taught, you know, in our lifetimes that Roe v. Wade is basically a more settled right than the Second Amendment, even though it's not in the Constitution. That's the impression we've been getting. But also this takes away the legitimacy of the Supreme Court, which has been bipartisan, kind of been understood. The Supreme Court are basically, sure, you disagree with their decisions, but these are good guys who play by the rules. We have to respect them. Once the Supreme Court's authority no longer has to be respected, we're off to the races. Because then what's holding us together in terms of authority? Nothing.
Right. Jeff Dice calls it a super legislature.
Yeah.
And that it's more and more clear to everybody that that's obviously what it is.
Oh, yeah,
and
of course.
When you grill people who are nominated to sit on it, and half the grilling involves asking them, you know, trying to figure out where they're going to come down on something, as opposed to figuring out what their philosophy
what's
of law
in their
is.
High that school, tells them. Or what's in their high school yearbook.
Yeah.
Can you imagine going for any job interview other than, you know, you graduated college, right? And they're like, you know, what did this mean in your high school yearbook? What?
Yeah, I know. They looked at my high school yearbook. They'd see my picture posing with the rest of the math team, by the way.
Oh, good Lord.
That would advance my career tremendously.
Yeah.
You know, as long as we're on national divorce, in theory, I'm all for it. In practice, it seems like it'd be awfully messy. I mean, you know, the whole country is divided on so many levels, even within the states. I'm not sure exactly how to proceed.
Okay, no divorce is easy.
True.
I've never heard of a divorce. Even a divorce where both people are like, you know what, we're not right for each other anymore. It's still going to be a pain in the ass. Well, even if 2 roommates, you know, you kind of whose stuff is what. I mean, there's no easy way to do it. So that's where the negotiations come in.
Yeah, yeah, true. And yet, I mean, look, right now what we've got is red versus blue. But there's so much beneath that.
I think it's just that simple.
Talk to me, because I don't want it to be that simple, because I don't fall fully into either of these. Although I know which one I would prefer, because I know which one didn't lock me in my house quite as long as the other one did.
Sure, but I mean, I'm in a blue city in a red state. It's really kind of interesting when the very bright people insist to me that I just moved to the San Francisco of Texas, which might be technically true, but, you know, factually irrelevant, because I do not feel at all as if I'm in San Francisco, I can assure people here in Austin. So we don't know. I mean, it could be geographical. It could be, I mean, we don't know where these lines are drawn. I don't think at all. I mean, it could be 5 countries that happen as a result. I mean, there's so many ways this could fall out. It's not even funny.
I want to go back a little bit. You mentioned stare decisis. What do you think, what's the right way to think about that? I mean, you can see people, I understand somebody who is being sincere saying, stability is preferable to instability. But I think there are worse things than instability.
Yes. I mean, this is kind of like that argument about would you rather have a strong presidency or a strong legislature? And it's like, well, I'd rather have the one where they're on the side of freedom.
Yeah.
I do think the best argument for conservatism was made by Chesterton and his, you know, concept. You and I discussed this before. Chesterton's fence, which is before you tear something down, you better know why it was put up to begin with. So, you know, if you have this kind of legal system where major laws or major concepts are overturned back and forth every 4 years, that's a real kind of opportunity for disaster. And I say this as an anarchist, because you can't make contracts that way.
Right. But then on the other hand, you know, the problem becomes if the court is, I mean, it's true that FDR was not successful in packing the court, but he was able in due course to appoint new justices. He appears to have intimidated at least one of them. And so he kind of got what he wanted without having to be quite so, you know, sledgehammer about it, let's say.
Right.
And so the court wound up approving all kinds of wild things that then, of course, they want to say, well, this is now settled law and there's nothing you can do about it. Well, I don't agree to that.
Oh, for sure. I think more stare decisis has to do with, you know, this kind of like, we had a Republican Senate, now we have Democratic Senate, then you're going to have a Republican Senate, so on and so forth. If you have the Supreme Court vacillating like that on free speech issues, gun right issues, abortion rights, it's really going to cause societal discomfort in a way that the legislature wouldn't. Because when you switch from Republican into Democrat Senate, it's not like they really need huge majorities to massively change the dynamic of the American cultural and political system. Whereas at the Supreme Court, you just need 5-4.
Yeah.
So it's a very different dynamic there than there is in the legislature or the presidency.
This seems like a lifetime ago at this point, but I remember being concerned that the whole controversy around Joe Rogan could really damage Spotify, which I thought was taking a good, bold, principled stand, when it looked like maybe it was possible that there could be an avalanche of artists removing their material from the platform. And that never happened. So I wonder now, I'm just shifting the topic over to Twitter a bit. We've heard the same thing there. I'm leaving Twitter. And I know some people have left Twitter. These are people I never wanted to interact with anyway, as it turns out.
Like who?
Sean King.
Oh, shoot. Okay. Yeah. That's fair to describe him as someone you never wanted to interact with.
Okay, good. But, you know, as somebody who spends more time on Twitter than I do, what do you think is going to happen with that? Do you think that's just going to stabilize?
You know what it was like? Neil Young was like, I'm pulling my music from Spotify. And Joni Mitchell's like, yeah, me too. And then like a rumor happened that Barbara Streisand was pulling it and they called her. She's like, I didn't pull my music. I don't know why I just did a black lady voice for Barbara Streisand, but I'm going to go with it. So yeah, Sean King, I know Jamila Jamil, who's an actress I'm sure no one's heard of, has left. No one's leaving Twitter. They're going to leave Twitter when they keep getting their asses handed them and it becomes an inhospitable environment for them. Then you might see people leaving en masse. But just this couple of names, that's it. It's really going to be a glorious time on Twitter. It's already started. They were using some kind of weird tomfoolery on the back end to engineer people's numbers. And then for some reason, we don't exactly know where, they lifted their finger off the scale. And me and many other bad people had a huge influx of followers, which was completely statistically anomalous. Whereas some malevolent actors like Alyssa Milano, Andrew Yang, Joy Behar, their numbers just, they lost a ton of followers overnight at the same period. So clearly there was some kind of engineering going on that they stopped doing.
Yeah. I mean, with me, I'm spending less time on Twitter these days, but I did poke in the other day to notice that I had a modest increase too, especially interestingly at a time when I'm tweeting less. And yet suddenly that's when I get more followers. Something's going on here. So that was an interesting thing to see.
And let me give people the numbers. So that, because a lot of people are like, oh, maybe people just joined Twitter because of Elon. No, this was statistically highly significant. So on average, before this happened, you were gaining like 50 to 60 Twitter followers a day, right? When this switch switched, you gained 500 followers that day, meaning a tenfold increase overnight. The next day, you had almost 800. So when something increases by an order of magnitude, that's not just statistical variation. That is some kind of change in the flow.
What's your opinion of the Truth Social fiasco?
Truth Social. I don't know if people saw this, but Trump was giving a rally and he's like, this is why I had to create Truth Social. I think it is DOA, even though it's like number one in the Apple store. The whole point of Trumpism to me and to him to some extent was he was in their house.
Right.
He was in their house taking a poop on their dishes and right. putting their heads in the toilet. Like if he's in his own, you know, house ranting and raving and denouncing people, which is entertaining, it's not the same thing. And if you're just going to have a kind of social media site that's heavily MAGA, you've seen what that looks like with Parler and to some extent Gab. And those are not fun places, in my opinion, in terms of having the kind of conversation I like to have.
Do you think he comes back onto Twitter?
Yes. I think the man is a complete addict. And I don't see how, if you're going to run for president, you're going to leave the tool that got you into the presidency.
But I mean, is he going to be allowed back on?
Well, that's I think if Elon takes over, he's going to be allowed back on. Yes. That's my prediction. Because I think it's really kind of really unconscionable to have a president not allowed to, or some, a major candidate not have the opportunity to address the voters. I think that's really putting your finger on the scale in a way that I don't even know that the courts or the FEC would like.
Do you think he comes back with simply an I'm back tweet? Or I don't know. I mean, you can't predict, but is it would be something cleverer than all he needs is two words, but I wonder if he comes up with something cleverer than that.
I mean, it might be funny if you just had some picture.
Oh, that would be good too.
Like I can see him photoshopping that Dewey defeats Truman and it's Trump defeats Biden or something. I don't know. Like he's actually, I mean, for someone who's like a boomer, he's actually like born the first year of the boomers. For him to use social media like that, I did a best Trump tweets tournament on my Twitter for the 16 best and people could vote. But we forget when Greta Thunberg, you know, was at the floor of the UN, you know, having her spurg out. And he just retweets her, goes, what a lovely young woman, such a bright future ahead of her. No one saw that coming and it was absolutely hilarious. So I don't think it'll be as simple as I'm back. I think it might be much more aggressive.
Take a minute to tell people about your locals community because I would like to promote that for you.
Oh, sure. So that's Ruben's outlet, malice.locals.com. There's like thousands of people there. It's like $5 a month if you want to post and comment. You could just join for free otherwise. But it's a good way for people to support me and find other like-minded individuals. And I just dropped the signed limited edition deluxe hardcover, The Anarchist Handbook, exclusively there. It's going to be there exclusively, I think, for another couple of weeks before I open it up to the public. So if they want to get one, they can get one there. It's glow-in-the-dark cover, foil stamped, embossed, all the bells and whistles. And if you like, you can just resell on eBay later.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Okay, malice.locals.com is where to go. All right, that's it. I just want to talk to you about these topics. I'll let you go on your way. But do check out malice.locals.com. Imagine a community with Michael Malice and people who like him. Why would you not want to be part of that? So go check that out.
And that's where I put the tweets I don't send.
That's even better.
No, I'm not kidding, because there's some that are too much.
That is great. That alone would make it worthwhile. All right, so head on over there, everybody, and thanks a lot, Michael.
Thank you, Tom.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it for today. Tomorrow, the great Jeff Deist returns to the Tom Woods Show, and that is never, ever boring. So you're going to want to tune in for that one. Thanks, everybody. See you then.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.